Blog Talk Radio.
Former Blackhawk, local guy, and the current color analyst for the Blackhawks on television, it is Eddie Olczyk.
The guy's an asshole. Dead air moments. Paid out the rectum.
Well, first of all, we're very, very happy with Dennis Savard as our head coach. He's growing.
What the fuck does that mean? I don't know how long you guys got, but I'll sit here till 4 in the morning and explain to you why James Wisniewski sucks.
You're never surprised by anything.
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
We're men, okay? That means a few things. We like to shit with the door open. We talk about pussy. We go on riverboat gambling trips. We make our own beef jerky. That's what we do.
How's it going again, everybody? It's Chris Block here on the Third Man in Radio. Well, maybe we'll have to just refer to tonight's show as Puck Chatter Radio, but more on that in a minute. It is 8:01 here in Chicago on this a benchmark day in Chicago Blackhawks history, or it could be, if not certainly the most career-defining moment in Stan Bowman's general managing career. It is Monday night, August 2nd, and with me tonight, special guest from the fifthfeather.com. You can catch that at Fifth Feather. Drop the fifthfeather.com. It is John. How are you doing tonight, John?
Good, Chris. How are you?
All things considered, pretty well. You know, obviously today, everybody knows by now, Antti Niemi is no longer a Chicago Blackhawk. Last night, the news kind of filtered, and, you know, the Blackhawks front office, of what I know about it, is a weird, a lot of odd things go on there in their day-to-day operations, and it's actually one of the reasons that Rick Dudley left a couple of years ago. Mysterious things happen, and last night, Dan Rowan, WGN-TV, was the only person on the earth that knew that the Blackhawks were going to sign Marty Turco. Announced it, and then, of course, nobody of the Blackhawks would confirm it. Everybody's lists were tight. And this morning we find out, in fact, the Blackhawks chose to walk away from the $2.75 million arbitration reward that Antti Niemi received and instead signed Marty Turco to a one-year, $1.3 million contract. A lot of stuff here to talk about, but your initial reaction at the news?
Well, I was shocked at how low Turco took of a contract for a 1 year, 1.3. When I heard the initial report of 1.75, I was kind of like, oh, well, that's not really, you know, that much of savings. You know, $1 million for all the mess that they're going to create. I mean, it's not that big of a difference. But I think when you open up, you know, 1.5 a cap space, statistically, they're about the same guy. They're both going to sign a year contract, so they both are going to be gone after this following season anyways. I think you could make that argument that Niemi was going to play for the 1 year, even if he were awarded the arbitration, then he was going to test the waters next year. Turco is going to do the same thing. I think when you add it all up, I think they're better off taking the 1.5 cap space, getting a goalie who's similar to Niemi, plays a similar style, has statistically is a better player, and when the sum total is you're better off with getting a defenseman, you know, or a winger, whatever they want. You know, Bowman said today that they need a defenseman, so they'll probably use that extra cap space for a defenseman, and I think that's the right thing to do.
If that defenseman is Jordan Hendry, are you satisfied with that?
Well, Yes and no. I mean, I think it'll be more than just Jordan Hendry. I think that they opened up some breathing room to have Jordan Hendry, you know, if they, depending on what they get Hendry to sign at, and you know, by all accounts, it's going to be similar to what he just made. That's why they didn't give him an offer sheet or a qualifying offer, and because they wanted to negotiate with him not to go the 10% raise. So if it's going to be like if it's going to be in that area, they're still going to have room to pick up some kind of low risk, high reward defenseman. Whether it's, you know, I've seen Jay McKee's name thrown around. You know, Andres Lilia is another guy who popped into my head today. I mean, I don't know if you really want to take a chance with him. You don't know how healthy he'll be, but I think if you throw in Turco plus whoever else they're going to get out of this, then I think it's a good move. But you know, I guess I'll reserve my full judgment until I see what they do with the open cap space that they have.
Yeah, certainly. I think that one thing that the Blackhawks, you know, Stan Bowman saying that, you know, they need, you know, they're looking specifically at defense to shore up. The thing that they need, Jordan Hendry's probably going to come back. I mean, if he was at the convention this weekend, I can't imagine that he's not in the fold. He could have been the guy that they said, hey, we're going to bring you back, but because of that 10% summer cushion and the fact that Huey's going to count until they find him a home, that maybe they're like, well, we've got an agreement with you, but we can't make it official till later. And he was fine with that. I don't know that, but that sounds like it could be a reason. But Jordan Hendry, they one thing that they lose with Sofol is size and grit. And, yeah, they got size and maybe a little bit of a toughness with John Scott, but they also need a guy who can skate on that third pairing. And I just don't see John Scott giving them discernible minutes there on that third pairing. And that's huge because you can't, and I've talked about this many times now this offseason, the loss of Brent Sopel is greater than a lot of people would like to, you know, believe, because Brent Sopel ate up a lot of hard minutes, those penalty-killing minutes. And just, you know, being able to give you 12, 13 solid minutes a night. And They need someone to replace that. And, yeah, I do think that it's got to be somebody that's better, you know, better than Hendry, a little bit bigger, you know, dependable. But I don't know how much – I mean, as we get later on into August, UFAs will start getting more and more desperate, kind of like how we saw Marty Turco today. I'm with you. I'm shocked it was only $1.3 million. And especially, like, at the last minute – I mean, maybe Turco and his agent didn't want to screw up their agreement, but at the last minute, you know, when it becomes obvious that the Blackhawks are walking away from Antoniemi, and that, I mean, the magnitude of that decision, the balls of that decision is just enormous to walk away from this 26-year-old defending, you know, the guy that, well, no matter how great or how good you think Niemi is, the fact is he just backstopped you to Stanley Cup, and that means something. And just to let that guy walk takes a lot of nerve. And, you know, so at the last minute, I'd be like, if I was Turco, I'd be like, well, hey, you know, instead of 1.3, give me 1.6 or something. You know, 1.3 is amazing that they actually got that number. And, yeah, what the Blackhawks are saving with Niemi, you know, if it was Niemi and Crawford were the tandem, with Niemi's reward, which is now null and void, which is another thing we have to talk about. But in that hypothetical scenario, the Blackhawks would have been investing $3.55 million in goaltending, and now they're investing $2.1 million. So it's a savings of about $1.5 million. Some of that will go to an extra player, so you can carry 22 of a 23-man roster, and the other potentially goes to bringing in another defenseman, and gives you the flexibility to bring up Kyle Beach, which before today was almost not even an option. I mean, so the one thing that it does do is it creates competition in camp again, which is healthy.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely opens the door to a lot of guys who probably didn't have the chance. I mean, you know, I know we're on the same page with this, but, you know, if Nicoletti comes in and plays the preseason of his life, he'll have an outside chance of making the team now, even with his, you know, his excessive cap hit. he will still have a shot at making it. And I think that, like you said, it's healthy. And also, I'm also just stunned by the amount of balls that it took to make to just do this. I'm still in a little bit of shock that they did it. Deep down, like, I kept thinking that they would, that it was a, you know, probably the right move for them to do it, but I didn't think that they would have the guts to actually go through with it, and I still can't believe it.
And the reason why I called it a benchmark day, I mean, because let's, you know, a number one goaltender, like a stud goaltender that could project to be your goaltender. I mean, this day and age, you don't project much past 3-4 years, but I mean, a guy that could be your number one and don't have to worry about goaltending at all and just move on to other needs, Antti Niemi could have been that guy. Now, you know, I mean, it's everything's open to, well, we'll see. I mean, maybe that was his career year. Who knows? Maybe he gets to him, he gets a big head, and he falters. It's going to be quite unfair at this point to judge Antti Niemi based on wherever he ends up. One of the things that I think, you know, in this situation, in walking away from Niemi, the Blackhawks received no compensation whatsoever for their Stanley Cup champion goaltender.
Well, not yet. Isn't it, if he signs 80% less of what he was awarded, don't they get a – but I don't even think that he would have to sign for something for peanuts.
Yeah. But but let's just say that they, I mean, they're risking not. So let's just go with that
right
at this point.
Right.
So they're
okay
risking not. You know, and you talked about it before. It's like, okay, Marty Turco's going to come in here. Best case scenario, Marty Turco plays terrific. Okay. Well, Marty Turco's going to be looking for his payday next summer, and the Blackhawks probably aren't going to have the resources to give him that money. They got Brent Seabrook to pay next year, and you know, they've got to start being smarter about this salary cap. You know, I mean, you've got to start looking 2-3 years down the road. What is Kyle Beach going to be? I don't see Troy. I see this being Troy Brower's last year with the organization. They have to be smarter with how they allocate these things. If the mythical core does include, you know, players like Boland and Sharp and Hossa and Halmerson and Campbell, if those players are included in that, then you can't. I mean, there are no more big contracts to give out. It'll be this way every single year, where you lose a player or two, and then you fill them up with players from the organization, prospects. You know, so I just don't see. This is my problem with the Niemi thing. You gave away this goaltender, and yeah, okay. If Marty Turco comes in and has a great year, he's going to be looking for a payday, and he's going to be out the door. Where this decision was made in my mind is the Blackhawks' belief, hopefully, because this is the only way it makes sense. The Blackhawks' belief that Corey Crawford, given 35-40 games in the regular season this year, can prove that he's their goalie long term. Because I look at this because of, and we're going to talk about some of the moves and what they mean and all that as we go along. But the way I look at this team and the fact that yes, you got two terrific top lines, no matter how they shake out. And then you've got some inexperience. You have question marks. You'll have rookies in place. I look at this team the way I remember the 2008-2009 Chicago Blackhawks. Yes, they'll have terrific top four defense. Remains to be seen. They have, you know, Turco will be okay, but will okay just be enough in the playoffs and late in the season when you have younger, inexperienced guys in, you know, those kind of situations. The Blackhawks, it took the Blackhawks a year with growing pains, and just for some of these guys, Versteeg, Bufflin, guys like that, to gain that experience. So the next year when it came along, nothing fazed them. I look at that. I look at this season, yes, the Blackhawks are going to be a contender. Yeah, they'll be right in the thick of things. But I think, you know, we don't really know exactly how the Western Conference is going to look just yet. There's still some moves that are going to need to be made. Vancouver needs to get rid of salary. I don't know that San Jose's done yet. So it remains to be seen. But I just, to me, this is, it's not, you can't call it a rebuilding year, but this is a year that, I don't know. To let Niemi walk and bring in this, it's just like, I just see the Blackhawks next summer being in the same situation where they're going to be standing there like they were in 2008 looking for a goaltender. And there are big names out there, but they can't afford those big names. And it could be a situation where you overpay for someone that is not as good. And that's exactly how we landed in the spot that we are today.
Yeah, but I think they would have ended up in that situation regardless if they matched Niemi, because Niemi was just going to be here for the year, and then he would have been gone, in my opinion. I mean, I think, you know, even if the only way that I think he would come back at a reduced rate was if he crapped the bed next year. So I think that in the long run, I think they probably looked at it and they saw that, you know, either way we're going to be in the same position, so we might as well get the cheaper guy and put the better team in front of him rather than take the expensive guy and, you know, risk having Jason Cullimore be their sixth or seventh defenseman, or and having Evan Brophy, you know, get a regular spot on this team. You know, rather than, you know, opening up some room and letting the best player play, regardless of if he's making $800,000 or $500,000. So I guess it's just a matter of, you know, just waiting out this year and seeing what happens. I mean, it's crazy. But, yeah, they probably will be in a similar spot for the next couple of years, and I think a lot of that points to a couple of the, you know, the heavier contracts that needed to be. And there's only really two of them that, you know, stick out like a sore thumb. And one of them is going to be buried in Rockford, and the other one, you know, is still here.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I totally agree, and obviously that you know, they looked at flexibility, you know, and bringing in a veteran who, I mean, Marty Turco's not the worst goaltender in the league. He's still serviceable, perhaps with a really good defense in front of him and a puck possession team in front of him. You know, he has just good enough of a year or a solid year that no one misses Niemi, and that could be what happens. But, you know, to me, I don't know. I find something very wrong in this offseason and in two of the positions that you're constantly in this day and age looking to fulfill, which is a number one, a franchise goaltender. You know, and again, that's up for debate whether Niemi was that or not. But a franchise goaltender and a power forward. And the Blackhawks got rid of those guys. They don't have replacements for them just yet. You know, because in the end, what happened here, and this is the thing that bothers me because I'm not a Dave Bolin fan. They chose Dave Bolin over Dustin Byfuglien and Antti Niemi. And if I was in Stan Bowman's seat, I wouldn't have done that. I would have moved Dave Bolin because no other reason than the guy's got a bad back.
I agree with you 100%. We'd be pulling the same trigger. I think that Byfuglien, they'll miss Byfuglien probably more than anybody that they've traded. They, you know, Versteeg, they got rid of him. He was kind of, you know, a Kane light, or, you know, whatever you wanted to call him. He was a playmaking type who would disappear for a little bit. He wasn't as good, but, you know, he wasn't somebody that they didn't already have on the team. They don't have anybody like Byfuglien, and I mean the whole package. In my opinion, you know, he, especially when the playoffs came around, he set an attitude. And, you know, when they went into opposing rinks, he was the guy that everybody was booing. And I think they'll miss that. And I think they'll miss that more than a lot of people realize.
Yeah, I mean, Byfuglien gave them, in the playoffs, Byfuglien gave them an identity. Certainly against Vancouver, again against San Jose. He was in and out of that series with Philadelphia, but you can make an argument that the Blackhawks don't beat Vancouver if Dustin Byfuglien doesn't do what he did, you know, to Roberto Luongo. I mean, that series did not start out well, and then Byfuglien kicked it in when they went out to Vancouver, and all of a sudden, like, you know, the Canucks just deteriorated, you know. And that's, you know, I said that, you know, we talked about this last week when I had Dieter Kurtenbach on. It's like 220 players were just drafted in June. And not a single one of them is 6'4", 260 pounds, and can skate like Dustin Byfuglien. I understand, and I grant it, there's been growing pains in the regular season. But Dustin Byfuglien isn't the prototype, and I think this is part of people's problem with Byfuglien, is he's not historic. I mean, when you look back in history, he's not the prototypical power forward. I think when people hear power forward or they see a 6'4", 260-pound guy, they immediately think Cam Neely or just a guy that's out there running over everything that he sees and dropping the gloves once every other game. And that's not Dustin Byfuglien's, you know, that's not his personality. But he is a huge body that you can't move, and when he gets going, he's gonna be able to do whatever he wants. And that's an element that the Blackhawks can't replace. I don't think Brian Bickle's that guy. Kyle Beach is more of a floater and a guy that, I mean, he'll be a scorer, I think, in the National Hockey League just because he's a guy that picks his spots, he floats around, and that's how he ends up with a lot of his dirty, you know, behind-the-play actions that have gotten him suspended and in trouble in junior hockey, is that he's not assertive, you know, because he does act like a scorer who also has a mean streak. But in Kyle Beach's case, it's you know, we'll talk about Kyle Beach another time. But, you know, I to me, sitting, you know, and I talked, like I said, with last week with Dieter, I'm 32 now, and you know, creeping in on 33 here. But I've been around long, you know, I watched the Al Secord era, and ever since Al Secord left, the Blackhawks have been trying to replace Al Secord. And Dustin, it's a new era. I don't think that you're going to have Al Secord or Wendell Clark or the Bob Probert that people romanticize about. Because even Keith Tkachuk, who's probably the guy that when he came up in Winnipeg and Phoenix, when a guy can score like that and a guy can play finesse hockey with a top line, his coach will basically ban him from fighting. So, you know, you're not going to have that from a first-line guy. But Byfuglien, and the other thing with Byfuglien is he's a defenseman that's trying to learn the forward position. So I think that contributed to a lot of his, you know, nights where it's like, what is Byfuglien doing out there? Well, where was Dustin Byfuglien? It's because he's learning how to be a forward. You know,
yeah, and he got the bullseye put on his back pretty early too, is when he was awarded the $3 million from Talon, because Talon was afraid of an offer sheet coming in. And I think as soon as he got I don't remember exactly, but I seem to remember him not being people not being as down on him in the 07-08 year when Savard switched him halfway through the year from defense to forward, whereas in 08-09 people were on him from like the fourth game of the season. And they were on his ass the rest of the year until the Vancouver series. And I just think that he, for whatever reason, as soon as he got that offer sheet and he signed it, that was it. Like, people were on him. People expected him to be Cam Neely from that day forward. And he just wasn't. He needed time to figure out how to play forward at the professional level.
I mean, that's one of the negatives, you know, this day and age about you know, the internet and the resources and things like CapGeek, is that everybody goes on, they know exactly what these guys make, and you start expecting, you know, the world of some of these guys. And yeah, I mean, but that was the thing. I mean, Byfuglien was, you know, he was a defenseman, but, you know, I criticized Dennis Savard at the time for, you know, because it was Dustin Byfuglien. It was a late November game against the Phoenix Coyotes. Dustin Byfuglien scores a hat trick. It was actually one of the first, if not, I think it was the first game that was televised, first home game that was televised after McDonough and Rocky Wirtz took over.
It was the first or second.
Yeah. And Dustin Byfuglien gets a hat trick that night, and immediately after the game, Dennis Savard says, we might have to move this guy up to forward. And lo and behold, a week later, he's a forward. You know. But it was the right move to make because Dustin Byfuglien on defense, you know, I watched him play in Norfolk and Rockford, and Dustin Byfuglien on defense was never coached. And Mike Haviland was his coach. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien was allowed to do whatever he wanted. Dustin Byfuglien would pull Scott Niedermeyer constantly, and he would just skate the puck up, and then he'd hang low, and then he'd go back to his position whenever he felt like it. And he just wasn't groomed to be an NHL defenseman. And it was the right decision to move him. But I don't see anybody in the system that replaces him. You're gonna, like I said, I just have this feeling that we're entering the final year of Troy Brouwer. No matter how, I mean, if he doesn't play well or if his game, you know, goes down a notch, they're gonna replace him anyway. And if he does do well, there's gonna be a team looking for Troy Brouwer's services, and the Blackhawks will replace him with Bickle or somebody. You know, so I just don't see where the Blackhawks replace that guy. And like I said before, we went through a decade and a half of this, of trying to replace and have a power forward. You talk about Patrick Poulin, Mark Bell. I mean, these are the guys that came through here trying to be that guy. And finally you have him, and he's the first guy that you dealt. And I didn't understand it, and I still don't. And then it boils down to Boland or your number one goalie. And, you know, I can accept the one thing that I'm shocked, and I ask you about this. I live outside of the inline, the online hockey fan bubble for the most part. Like, I don't get too wrapped up in what the hardcore fans that are on their Twitters all day and all that kind of stuff. I live outside of that, and I haven't found one person, and this is leading up to today, that would understand that Niemi's not on this team. So I was quite shocked that they went ahead and did this. I even suggested as much to say that this wasn't going to be Stan Bowman's decision, that this would be John McDonough's decision. And that, how do you explain to, I mean, the percentage of the fan base there are as into it as, you know, John or myself or the people that listen to this show, is, in the grand scheme of things, is so small, you know, when you talk about the actual hockey consumers, that how do you explain to 90% of the fan base that the guy that just won you a Stanley Cup, because in most people's minds, the goalie that won the Stanley Cup is one of, if not the best goaltenders in the league. So how do you explain to them that you let that guy walk, potentially and most likely, without getting anything in return? I that part of it right there, you know, just really shocked me that they were able to, that they were willing to do that.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I was walking to the L today, and or on my way home, and I heard these two guys talking about it, and this one guy was saying to the other, you know, 2.75 for a guy who just won you the cup. How do you not pay that money? And I was ready to stop him and explain to him the intricacies of the salary cap and everything else, the 4.1 penalty that the Hawks had to pay because of the they went over for the year before. And then I was like, you know what, forget it. Let the guy live in his own, let him think what he wants. There's just no way to explain it to people. That's why I don't know how they can spin this to say this is what we wanted and this was what we wanted all along. This is a good move for us and here's why. It's just,
you know, like, I mean, you talk about the, you know, those people that you the guy that you encountered today, you know, just a common hockey fan that you know, watches the Blackhawks and is going to go to the United Center, is going to spend their money to go and boo and cheer who they will. And I mentioned this, you know, last couple of days. I look at this situation from Marty Turco's standpoint. You know, we talked about it on last week's show. Cristobal Huey, the era here, it wasn't meant to be. From coming in, and the Blackhawks can't get rid of Nikolai Hobby Bullen, so they're stuck with Hobby Bullen. Hobby Bullen gets motivated and beats Huey out for the job. Or they're both kind of the same guy, but in the end, Quenneville trusted the Stanley Cup champion goaltender over Huey. You go into the second season, and Quenneville's already got it in his mind that he can't trust Huey. And Huey, you know, he plays fine, but he's got this kid that plays out of his mind every time that he plays. And in the end, Huey falters, and Niemi gets the spot. It just wasn't meant to be. I don't think Cristobal Huey's a bad goaltender. I think he would have done fine maybe if Quenneville handled the second season a little differently. But it just wasn't meant to be. Is Marty Turco walking into the same situation? Is Marty Turco walking into an impossible situation where if he has a bad night on game one, opening, you know, the night that they drop the banner against the Red Wings, if the Red Wings light up Marty Turco, I mean, is it no turning back? Or will fans, you know, treat him like they've treated Brian Campbell and Huey for the same reasons that they just don't understand? And they're going to dislike this guy because he's not Niemi like they dislike Brian Campbell because he doesn't do everything like Chris Chelios did when he was here. You know, I think we're walking into the same situation.
Well, I think there's a huge difference. There's one main difference between Turco and Huey, and that was one of Huey's biggest question marks was whether he could handle the workload of a number one. And you know, going in, that Turco can, because, I mean, he's played his whole career playing 60-plus games every season and sometimes 70-plus games. So I think that's one big question mark that Huey had that Turco won't. But like you said, if he has, you know, if he goes out in game one and the Red Wings score four or five against them, not even four or five, if they score two or three and the Hawks lose in a shootout, it's, you know, it'll be open season on him, at least for the first couple games.
Yeah, I like Marty Turco, and the fact I would much rather have Marty Turco over Jose Theodore.
Yes.
You know, that's you know, I mean, I would have been shocked if Theodore had been the guy, just because the last two playoff seasons, Theodore hasn't been able to handle the pressure in Washington. You know, how do you think he's going to handle the pressure all season in a Stanley Cup championship town? You know, the most recent anyway. It wouldn't have made any sense. So to do what they did, Turco's the right guy, and I think Turco's a good guy. You're right. From his history anyway, he should be able to handle this fine. But again, you know, if he starts out rough, I mean, the Blackhawks are a much better team even today than the last two seasons in Dallas that Turco sat behind. But Turco had a lot of bad nights. And if you put a string of those together, and again, if it's just, you know, if Corey Crawford comes in, Corey Crawford has a history with the Chicago Blackhawks of coming up from the minors, playing one or two games, and looking spectacular. I mean, he does have that history. He didn't have that great of a training camp last September, but in his limited duty at the NHL level, he's been pretty good. So if Corey Crawford, just like Antti Niemi last year, gets that spot duty and comes in and plays well, and you've got Marty Turco. I don't even know who's on the team, John. you got Marty Turco putting a month of October together where, you know, he's got a goals against in 3.5 or above, but he, you know, maybe he's .500 or he's 5-4, but he's got that goals against in that save percentage that looks scary. I mean, you know, will he be able to handle that kind of pressure? And will Joel Quenneville be patient with him? You know, because that's one thing. The one thing throughout Quenneville's career is that he hasn't particularly dealt with goaltenders very well. And he didn't this past year, and everything worked out. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, the Blackhawks are on an amazing run of no matter what they do, it works out. And I think, you know, for some fans, there's that false sense of security. You know, it's like and I think this is more of the learned fans, you know, like we talked about, like that listen to this and are online constantly consuming everything that they can about Chicago Blackhawks in the league. Those fans are kind of like, well, you know, Dustin Byfuglien's inconsistent in the regular season, so, you know, good riddance. Or Chris Versteeg is, you know, Chris Versteeg, fine, we've got Victor Stahlberg, and it's in the end it'll probably be the same thing. But, you know, at some point here, you know, when you fire your general manager after you let him run free agency in the draft, and you go into a season knowing that you're going to get rid of your coach, but you let him run training camp. Countless decisions, on and on and on. The qualifying offer sheet 2 years ago, or last summer, that they screwed up. All of these things in the end haven't mattered, and everything's turned out great. At some point, these things are going to turn around on you. And I keep going back to the Boland thing. Boland was terrific in the playoffs, terrific, you know, after the first round. You know, his performance against Vancouver, against San Jose, and against the Flyers was great. But I just keep going, you know, at the convention this weekend, you see Eric Daze, and every time you see Eric Daze, you think potential never realized because he was constantly in the training room and on the operating bed. And we just know from history, chronic back problems never go away. And, you know, Boland is best in that three slot, and he's making $3.3 million, almost $3.4 million, and there's a lot of things that have gone on this summer that are going to tell us one way or another, probably very soon, of Stan Bowman's abilities as a general manager. And I think that's one of the most exciting things about this is that we have Stan Bowman had a year where he was just sitting there basically doing nothing, you know. And now we have all these, you know, these decisions and these moves that he's made, and we're going to find out what kind of general manager he is.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I know Bob and I were talking a little while ago, and Bobby was talking about how basically he was in himself, speaking for himself, that he was in cruise control this whole year. He didn't really, you know, they won the cup, but, you know, he never really, the only time he ever, you know, or, I mean, we in general, the only time we ever had a doubt was me for myself, the first round against Nashville. I was teetering a little bit back and forth whether they were going to get past them, and he didn't think they were going to get past Vancouver. Once they got past Nashville and once they got past Vancouver, we both had no doubt, and it was basically cruise control from November, to be honest, with this team. You know, they had hiccup in March.
Came in,
they had the little hiccup in March, but nobody really took that seriously. But this year will be a little different. I mean, you're going to have a lot of question marks. You're going to have what, 4 or 5 roster battles in training camp. So I mean that's different right there. They didn't have one roster battle last year. So I think, and, you know, I'm also interested to see everybody's reaction to this team just because of how spoiled everybody was. I mean, you go back to talking about complaining about Bufflin all the time, what he didn't do in the regular season. Well, you're going to have a whole new world of hurt with, if you're, you know, looking at guys like Tafe and who's the other, Stahlberg, all these guys, you know, they're going to have significant growing pains. I mean, these guys aren't NHL regulars that they're plugging into a lineup here. I mean, you like to hope that, you know, they could be like the Red Wings where they could just pluck somebody up and, you know, everything will be fine and everything will work out. But, you know, there's only one Detroit Red Wings, and there's plenty of other teams that have problems filling in holes in their roster.
Yeah, you know what? And the other thing is, I mean, the depth is such a huge thing. I mean, if Jack Skilly is on this team and, you know, he disappears for 2 weeks, I mean, he's probably not going back down to Rockford because he's still better than any option that you have at Rockford. So, you know, I mean, you'll have situations like that where if Victor Stahlberg gets benched, you know, and ends up in Quenville's doghouse, where I'm absolutely certain he will at times during this season. You know, he's still going to be on the ice, you know. And that's one thing with the depth that the Blackhawks had. It's like if Jack Skilly comes up and he doesn't perform in 1 or 2 games, he's gone. And that's not going to be the case this year. You're going to have you'll be prone to some slumps, which is the one thing, you know, aside from the health factor. The Blackhawks, you mentioned the hiccup in March, but I remember that, and I just remember thinking to myself and other people that I talked to at the time, I just said to myself, you know what, it's better that this is happening now. You know, that was probably the best time for that to happen, you know, because as a team and as a group that cruised through the season, it was nice to have that little moment in the season where you start to understand that it's not, you can't put it in cruise control. You're going to have to earn it. And it was like the slap in the face, the cold water that they needed. And, yeah, they started off kind of the same way. I think that they took Nashville for granted, and as soon as they figured out that they were going to have to compete hard and harder than Nashville, they won that series too. But they're going to have to play like that all season long because, you know, you talk about every team. It doesn't matter if it's the Red Wings or if it's the Atlanta Thrashers. When the Blackhawks come to town this year, when someone comes to the United Center, it's that team's biggest game of the year, or one of them. And they're going to be in fights every single night. Now they're undermanned, and it's going to be tough. But for me, as a hockey fan, I'm going to enjoy that just as much as I enjoyed last year because it will be. You can't take it for granted. It will be the drama will be that much more significant of whether or not they're going to make it. And I think for fans, even though you'd like to believe that you're going to go to the United Center and watch the Blackhawks walk all over teams night after night, but I think it'll be more fun for the fan that there is that drama, that uncertainty there of this team, and whatever they accomplish next year, I think the feeling of achievement will be that much greater.
I agree.
Let's talk about, first of all, and people can play along if they're listening, whenever they're listening, if you go to capgeek.com. I fooled around with this just before we came on the air. For people who are thinking, like, okay, what is this team going to look like? At the convention over the weekend when they announced that the Stanley Cup champion Blackhawks, they paraded 10 guys out. And one of them was Brian Bickle, who played before playoff games. But as of right now, a realistic roster you know, that fits under the salary cap at this point, of course, we have Marty Turco, Corey Crawford in the Nets. I only came up with 22 guys working under the cap, but it's not exactly that because they do have a few guys that are on entry levels and have two-way deals. So they'll be able to do the Rockford shuffle a little bit. Not as much as I think people are expecting, but they'll be able to do it a little bit. And the lines are up for debate. But Brouwer, Taves, and Kane on the first line, either Stahlberg or Beach, because Beach has got to be – Beach and Stahlberg have to be on the second or third line. Otherwise, they shouldn't even be on the team. So let's just say Beach, Sharp, and Hossa, Stahlberg, Bolin, and Skilly, Bickle, Dahl, and Kopechki. If you're carrying an extra guy, it's dispensable. Let's just say it's Klinkhammer. Your defense today is Keith Seabrook, Jalmerson, Campbell, Scott, and let's just say Hendry. And if you're carrying a seventh defenseman, Vishnevsky. Vishnevsky's on an entry level. You're not saving much more than, I think, $60,000 by between, you know, his bonuses and his entry level. But Beach's actual salary is $875,000. His cap hit's a little under $1.2 million. Stahlberg, $785,000. His cap hit's $850,000. But those are the players. Beach, Stahlberg, potentially Klinkhammer, and Vishnevsky. Those are the players, and Dahl, excuse me, that have two-way contracts. Everybody else is on a one-way. So they do have a little bit of flexibility there to save some money on certain days along the way during the season. But as of right now, the way it looks, I think that's a good guess at what the team's going to look like. Do you have any other guys or that you
would
think
just just the people that I was saying earlier, if they can get a veteran on the cheap, you know, like they did a few years ago with Sopel, where he was, you know, he was a last-minute cut by the Red Wings, so the Hawks picked him up. I mean, I don't think they'll get that lucky again. But, I mean, you look at a couple guys that I mentioned, McKee or Lilia, I mean, those guys didn't make much last year, and they're on the downside of the career, and I think you can get them for, you know, $600,000-$800,000. You know, I don't know if you get them much lower than that, but you could conceivably get them for that much. So maybe you could plug one of those guys in instead of Vishnevsky, and you end up saving a couple bucks. But other than that, yeah, that's pretty much the team that I have too.
Okay, let's talk about some different things that have gone on. Nicholas Jalmerson. Now, one of the things, and I don't know how much we're going to talk about the Blackhawks convention. I didn't go. John, you didn't go.
No.
You'd have to pay me to go to that thing. But, and one of the, I should say this, you know, you talk about the one thing, and I know that Forklift from HockeyNight.com went, but the only day that he went was Saturday because the only thing he's interested in is the Q&As. You know, from my standpoint, I almost felt like I wanted to go just to sit up, you know, sit at the Q&As and take copious notes, but I'm sitting there, you know, in front of my computer on Saturday morning, and I realized that the Blackhawks are streaming most of the Q&As online. So it's like, well, I don't even have to go. So, I mean, I know why they do it, because you know, they got a sold-out convention, and they, you know, if you, and their mentality is, no matter how many people watch it, if a certain percentage of them look at it and go, "Wow, I want to go next year," they're, you know, any turnover you fulfill there. But I don't know. That I just thought that was kind of weird. But Nicholas Jalmerson, 4 years, at $3.5 million a year. From San Jose. Now, what I want to talk about, and I want to know your reaction to this. Now, I don't know what else he was supposed to say, but on Friday, Nicholas Jalmerson told the media that when he signed that offer sheet, he expected to play in San Jose. He thought that there was no way the Blackhawks were going to match. Does that bother you?
Yes, it does. It bothers me more. I know the quote that you're talking about, and I remember reading it and thinking, you know, what, you know, like I was almost, I don't want to say livid because, you know, I don't really get livid over, you know, a professional player making a decision, but it was really almost insulting, you know, the way he said it and the way that, you know, just the way everything went down. and the fact that, you know, he had no problem screwing over the Hawks. And, you know, the team would screw him just as quickly if they had the opportunity. But, you know, just the way that he made it sound like, you know, I was happy going to San Jose, I had no problem doing it, something just rubbed me the wrong way about it.
Yeah, I had the same reaction to it, and of course he caught himself and said, "Oh no, but I'm really happy, really happy that it worked out the way it did." Well, of course you are. I mean, you got the money that you wanted, and now you don't have to move. But, you know, it's, and I raised this question a few weeks back on the show. It's like, you know, players are they're very understanding of, you know, the business, most of them anyway, the business of hockey, and that's debatable because none of them even realize that they're heading into another Armageddon with the league, and they got to get their shit together because they just had a union meeting out in L.A. and 10 guys showed up. I mean, I'm really worried as a fan that we're heading into another lost season here. But debate for another show. But you know, the players understand that. Okay, Jamerson knew that he was going to get shortchanged by the Hawks, and San Jose comes up with this offer sheet, which, you know, if you believe what they said publicly, they never believed that the Blackhawks were going to allow Halmerson to walk, and you know, they were just trying to hurt the Hawks, which is, you know, that's a strategy, and it worked well. But, you know, I can't imagine that there isn't something inside a lot of players in that Blackhawks locker room that, you know, unless Halmerson comes in and he smooths things over right away, that they're sitting there in that locker room looking over at him and realizing that someone else is in Andrew Ladd's stall, someone else is in Bufflin's stall, and so on and so on and so on, and they don't have Antti Niemi, that they're not going to look at Jamerson and be like, you know what, why did you do that, you know? And, I'm not that much of a believer in, you know, the team unity and the dynamic in the locker room. I think that works up to a certain point, but at the end of the day, great players go out on the ice and they perform and they win. But I do think that could be something that goes on in that room this year. And also, long-term wise, and again, Stan Bowman will stand in front of a microphone and tell you that Jamerson's a part of his mythical core. But when Jamerson did this to him, I can't help but believe that long-term now, Stan Bowman is not thinking that Jamerson is, you know, because if you did it to him once, what's, you know, it's just like with Antti Niemi today. Part of the reason that he's no longer here is because he was difficult in negotiations. That, like you said, they forecasted that they just, no matter what he did this year, either he was going to shit the bed and they were going to be looking for another goaltender, or he was going to be just as good or better and he was going to want the world. And because if you believe the reports, he went into that arbitration hearing and he asked for $4 million, which is absurd. But, you know, that's what you do. You know, I mean, Halmerson, they could be looking at Halmerson the same way now. Is he going to be a difficult guy, and will he be moved somewhere down the line because of what he did to the Hawks this month?
Yeah, I agree. And also, I mean, another thing to keep in mind is they have, you know, whether or not they all pan out, they have the majority of their depth in their farm system is all defensively. So at some point, these guys are going to have to, you're going to have to move these guys up. You can't just, you know, keep dealing guys away and then keep, you know, rolling out the same four. You got to put some fresh blood out there. You know, Keith's not going anywhere. I don't think that Seabrook's going to go anywhere. Campbell, probably for a couple more years, is still going to be here. So, I mean, Jamerson right now, you got to think he's going to be the odd man out when guys like, you know, Dylan Olsen or Lalonde or Vishnevsky. I mean, if these guys are all breaking down the door to move up within the ranks, you know, somebody's going to have to go, and you're going to get rid of the guy who's going to be, you know, the easiest to get rid of. And to me, it's Jamerson.
Yeah,
I think that signing the offer sheet is just even more to the equation that would make him, you know, get kicked out the door faster.
All right, we mentioned him before. Let's talk about him. Let's talk about Blackhawks defensive prospects, Nick Leddy. John, were you at any of the prospect camp?
No, I didn't make it.
Okay, I was at prospect camp, and I'll say this, you know, because I think this, even though this is, you know, this is all Stan Bowman's doing, but I'll say this. I truly would not have any problem, even though it would probably mean, you know, mean that I wouldn't be able to attend anymore. I would have no problem with fans being barred from prospect camp and just locked out, and because you hear more stupid shit. And with all due respect to maybe people that are listening and we're there, but you hear, because you go to these camps and you see somebody skating around and scoring, and then they don't put things into proper perspective. I mean, they're out there playing against guys that just finished up their college career and are going nowhere but Europe or the ECHL, and that's where their career is going to end, the CHL, or, you know. And you've got guys that are undrafted junior players that are on their last days of, you know, even flirting with, you know, professional hockey. That's their competition. And, you know, Nick Leddy, I absolutely agree that Nick Leddy is a mirror image of Duncan Keith at the same age. I agree with that totally. But Duncan Keith also had the you know, he was afforded a whole year, you know, well, his second year at Michigan State, he left early because he wasn't getting enough ice time, and he went to Kelowna, and he played the rest of the season there, half of the season there, plus they had a long playoff run. So he had all of that time. Then he went to Norfolk. He played a full season in Norfolk, and then because of the lockout, the lost season of 04-05, he got another season in Norfolk of seasoning. To say, you know, for the Blackhawks to want to get Nick Leddy out of the University of Minnesota because they feel like that program's going nowhere and they want him to play more games and they want to have more of a hands-on involvement in his development, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But the 19-year-old year of any young defenseman that's going to be anything is crucial. And to potentially damage him by forcing him to the professional, forget about the Blackhawks, because, you know, one of the things that I saw that was obvious from watching camp is that they see Leddy and Lalonde as a future pairing in Chicago. So to me, if he's not going to junior, if that's something that the Blackhawks aren't seriously considering, is finding him a team in junior hockey, which is what I would do. But if that's not what they're doing, and they're going to, then turning Leddy pro is so that Leddy and Lalonde can skate together for a whole year in Rockford. You know, but, you know, to me, and you talked about it before with the Detroit Red Wings. In Detroit, there are no hurry to rush guys along, because when you bring guys up to the NHL level in Detroit, it's when they're absolutely ready and when they're ready to help you win a Stanley Cup. That's the goal, and that's what goes on there every single year. And Nick Leddy is nowhere near, you know, being ready to help the Blackhawks win a Stanley Cup. So why is there at all a speculation? And people ask me all the time when I'm at the rink, just playing hockey, Bender hockey by myself. People ask me, like, is Nick Leddy going to make the team? Nick Leddy going to make the team? No. But, you know, why potentially send him to Rockford when there's a chance that he'll be overwhelmed? And because Rockford's got to win hockey games too. They got to sell tickets. They got to win. You know, it's the coach will lose his job if he plays a bunch of guys that can't play just because the Blackhawks turned Nick Leddy pro. So you're bringing him in a situation where he could falter, and then his most important year of his development is lost because Stan Bowman got a Nick Leddy chubby at prospect camp.
So you're saying he's not the next Phil Housley?
I don't know whether he is or isn't. I mean, I watched,
because that's what Scotty Bowman thinks.
Well, you know, that points to a greater question. I mean, who's making these decisions?
Right, right.
But, you know, this is also, I mean, Scotty Bowman was also really high on Niemi, and they let Niemi go today. But,
right.
You know, I don't understand the psychology of, you know, again, if you don't like the Minnesota coach, Don Lucia, and you feel like, you know, you got to get him out of that program, fine, whatever. And the best way to get him out of that program is just sign him to his pro deal and then find a place for him to play in Canada. You know, but to And that may be what they still end up doing. Because, again, I have gone over this in my mind so many times, and I can't think of a scenario that makes better sense than sending him to Canada to play junior hockey.
I agree with you 100%. And then today I saw that Tim Sassone wrote that Bowman expects him to start the year in Rockford, and all hope was lost in my world.
I don't understand that, you know. But and you talk about the prospects, and you know, at some point something's got to give on the Blackhawks blue line, because you have Letty and Sean Lalonde and Dylan Olsen, and those are three guys that 2-3 years down the line are going to be major factors in the Blackhawks defense. Now, Keith isn't going anywhere. Seabrook's not going anywhere. At some point, you hope that Lalonde or Letty is able to take over for Campbell, and you can find somebody to take that contract. But that's another 2 years away, I think. You know, when you got less of that money left on Campbell's deal, where you can find a team that's desperate for a puck-moving defenseman and hope that, you know, Campbell's still at the level that he is now. You know, that's the other thing. You know, Brian Campbell's not 25 years old. So, but, yeah, I mean, decisions like that are going to have to be made. So, Jalmerson at some point, you know, I think Jalmerson and Campbell aren't long for this team when you're talking about 2-3 years down the road, because at the rate that the Blackhawks appear to be developing these guys or want to develop these guys and bring them into the NHL level, Letty's a year away, according to Stan Bowman, and Lalonde is a year away too. And then, I mean, to me, there's no me watching that camp, and my opinion's not the be-all, end-all, of course, but me watching that camp, the best defenseman at that camp, the most impressive guy, the guy that was assertive and had the biggest impact every time he was out on the ice, was Dylan Olsen. And it was interesting to me in that camp, the two scrimmages that I saw Dylan Olsen in, is he was playing with non-roster or non-organizational invitees. And you had Letty and Lalonde attached at the hip, and Olsen was out there sort of to fend for himself. I thought that was another interesting thing. And a major reason why I think that you don't hear people talking about Olsen from that camp the way they're talking about Letty and Lalonde. But, if Scotty Bowman, and this is the other thing, I mean, I don't know about you. Like, I am so tired of hearing about this in Scotty we trust crap. Because Scotty Bowman was the coach of the Detroit Red Wings, and Ken Holland and Jim Neal and all those guys, they were the ones that put that team together. They were the ones that instilled all of the processes and everything that the Detroit Red Wings are today is because they set those wheels in motion. They've made those things what they are today. And Scotty Bowman coached the team, and then he sat off to the side just like he is now and observed and gave his input. And you know, how many years did we hear about Ville Leino and Darren Helm and Abdelkader, and each year these guys come up and they get a little taste. And then, you know, then they're out of the lineup, and you wait, you know, and it's worked out that they hold these guys off until they're absolutely ready to come in. And now the Blackhawks, under Scotty Bowman and Scotty We Trust, are rushing these guys to the pro level. So I wonder, just how much did Scotty Bowman learn from his time there?
Not much, apparently. And I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm getting tired of the Scotty Bowman crap as well. I mean, I think it was a nice move to bring him in. I mean, he was hanging out. I don't know if you remember, but during the 07-08 year, he was at the United Center almost every home game, and he was hanging around. I mean, almost to the point where people were whispering that he might be, you know, lobbying to take over for Savard when they were going to make a coaching change at some point. But you know, I think it's nice that they have him on as like an advisor, but I think he gets way too much credit than he deserves. Going back to his, you know, Detroit days, I mean, he didn't do much with Buffalo when he was with Buffalo. I mean, he brought him to the playoffs every year. But I mean, if you're going to give the guy credit for being this, you know, mythical genius, you have to also talk about, you know, when he wasn't as good, and he wasn't as good in Buffalo as he was in Detroit or Montreal or even St. Louis. But yeah, I mean, it's getting to the point of almost absurdity with him and the way people talk about him.
All right, well, we got about a half hour left here. We got to get moving along. I do want to point out from the Blackhawks convention, I got a bunch of emails from people that were there, and apparently this thing is still not very well planned out, and security is a nightmare. I heard a couple of people reported to me that you didn't even, you know, in order for you to just walk around and get into the Q&A sessions and everything, as long as you were in Blackhawk apparel, you could do whatever you wanted there. You didn't need a ticket to the event. So, you know, that's something that I'm sure John McDonough would love to hear. But
the next commissioner?
Yeah, the next commissioner. Well, let's talk about that. Dan McGrath, former sports editor over the Tribune, writes a story that peculiarly ends up on the New York Times website about a week and a half ago, basically, you know, talking about how great John McDonough is and the great job that he's done, and John McDonough has done a number of great things here, of course. But there's a line, a little blurb towards the end where it suggests that there's been, you know, scuttle around the league that John McDonough is one of the main candidates for NHL commissioner when Gary Bettman decides to move along, which isn't going to be anytime soon. But, you know, I don't know. What do you think about the potential of you think that's even realistic that John McDonough would want to be the NHL commissioner?
I think you have to consider the source, and Dan McGrath has always been notoriously a mouthpiece for certain guys. When, you know, he was the Trib editor, Dusty Baker would say whatever he wanted through him. And, you know, McDonough, you know, he wasn't the president at the time of the Cubs. I think he was the head of marketing. So I'm sure him and McGrath have, you know, quite the relationship. But there's no chance that I could see McDonough being just think about all the bad PR the Hawks have had in the past 3 years with him at the helm of president. If you're talking about giving somebody like that the presidency or to be commissioner of the NHL, I mean, I know Bettman's no great shakes, but you're going to want to have improvement at that position if you're going to get a new person in there. And to me, I don't know if McDonough would be that big of an upgrade. I mean, you have to look at the whole body of work. Yes, he brought the Hawks back from, you know, one of the worst organizations in all of sports. But on the other hand, he didn't really do anything that people weren't suggesting to do for 40 years. You know, put games on TV, bring back Bobby Hull, bring back Stan Mikita, bring back Tony Esposito, clean out the front office of all those old dopes that were, you know, just collecting dust out on the desk. You know, he didn't, and then, you know, he fired a coach after said he believed in him. He got rid of a general manager after he said that he's not going to go anywhere and we like what he's doing. And then not only that, he let him, you know, like you said, have the free agent class and the draft, and then got rid of him. And before that, the qualifying offers. So, I mean, he screws up just as much as, you know, he does well. So I just don't see him being a serious candidate for commissioner of any professional league.
The thing about it is, and I've raised that possibility almost since the day that McDonough became Blackhawks president, because if you look at it from the outside looking in, there's absolutely no way even the most avid Blackhawk fan could look at it and understand that John McDonough left the presidency of the Chicago Cubs to take the same role with the Chicago Blackhawks. There's no way to look at that objectively and not see it as a step down. You know, and there was other factors in McDonough leaving the Cubs, the uncertainty of ownership and all that. But there's no way to look at it other than he took a lesser job. His profile has been tremendous because this is a downtime in Chicago sports, and the Blackhawks, have risen to the top, you know, when the Bears aren't doing anything. And you know, so he's getting a lot of pub, and everything seems great right now. But to me, it always seemed like a stepping stone job, whether it's NHL commissioner, whether it's to build his resume to be another, you know, in another position in the Major League Baseball, NFL, something. It just It doesn't seem right to me that you would leave a Major League Baseball job to take an NHL job unless you had something else in mind coming after it. You know, and again, I don't. Obviously, to me, with Dan McGrath writing that in his article, it's in McDonough's mind. You know, so I mean, I don't know what Bettman's going to want to get through this next collective bargaining agreement. It's his war to fight, and then he'll probably stick around for a year or two to gloat over it if he wins. If he loses, he'll probably be removed immediately. But you know, you're still talking about 4 or 5 years down the line. 4 or 5 years is a long time for McDonough to screw this thing up. You know,
absolutely. And, I mean, just look at the last 2 years.
Yeah, and also, you know, McDonough's got his people that are, you know, he goes to in the media, Dave Kaplan, Dan McGrath, you know, anybody at GN, to push his image, push his, you know, his agenda. But Rocky Wirtz, and that's another thing that you know, is evident with Rocky Wirtz taking over this team, as much as it was to turn around the franchise and not carry this money, you know, loser of the Blackhawks. You know, if, you know, in his mind, if Peter was going to run it the same way that Bill did, he needed to take that team. But you see the Rocky Wirtz front and center at all games. He's got the biggest smile on his face. He loves that people know who he is now. So at some point, I foresee that those two guys, McDonough and Rocky, are going to clash. It's only natural that they would, because McDonough's done a good job of deferring to Rocky and all that. But when the time comes to either take the praise or accept blame, those two personalities are going to clash, and but time will tell. The other major thing to come out, and also as reported by the Chicago Tribune, is that the Blackhawks are still losing money, John. Were you surprised?
Not really. I kind of foresaw it. People think, you know, it's filled every night. People are buying Hawk crap all the time. But on the other hand, you're not seeing how much it actually costs to run that team, and you know, people complain about the ticket prices. Well, they had the third lowest ticket prices in all the leagues. I mean, they hadn't raised their tickets in almost 2-3 years. So no, and the fact that how quickly they escalated their total salaries as far as the team, you know, everything that, you know, they went from having one of the lowest paid teams to having one of the highest paid teams within 2 seasons, not even. Well, maybe just 1 season. If you go back from 07-08 to 08, or yeah, 07-08 to 08-09. So no, it didn't really shock me. Neither did the timing of it. That the fact that they would say it right, or they would say it publicly right before there was a big ticket raise. So, long story short, no, I wasn't surprised.
Yeah, and you. I mean, this is one thing that's been, you know, I've been asked, you know, do you believe them? How could that be? Do you believe them? Are they lying? I mean, there's no way. There's no way he's lying. Because, I mean, the Blackhawks might be a private, you know, a private business. But, you know, as we head to another, you know, collective bargaining agreement, those numbers are going to come out eventually. So if, you know, and you could do creative accounting, and the Blackhawks do have a unique business in which, you know, they own half of the United Center, and there's rents involved and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you can make something look not as profitable if with a little bit of accounting. But to me, those numbers are going to come out eventually. He can't lie about that, and nor why would he, you know. And we don't know how much they lost. I mean, at the end of the year after the playoffs, he could have lost $20, but they're still losing. You know, that's all he's really told us is they lost. But I do think it's pretty significant because, he admitted that in certain points of the season this past year, he had to write the Blackhawks a check just to make payroll, you know. And that's another thing with McDonough. It's like, what has he really done? Well, he's also been a guy who's been given an unlimited budget, and he's spending an unlimited budget, you know. He's you just think about all the ads that you see for the Blackhawks. And all the places that you see the Blackhawks, and the fact that they're still giving away a lot of tickets, especially for those corporate boxes, trying to get, you know, money players in and show, you know, business people and potential, you know, United Center and Chicago Blackhawks clients that you know, this is a great thing. So they're still giving away a lot. I don't think quite, you know, I know that in 2007-08 the Blackhawks were giving away between 2,500 and 2,000 comp tickets a night. I don't think it's quite that much anymore, but they're still giving away a lot of tickets, I mean, to me, it was, you think about the other thing, okay, national television revenue, I mean, the pot is so small that the money that the Blackhawks get is between $6 and $10 million from, you know, and most of that money is coming from CBC and TSN. Because they're not getting any money from this revenue sharing agreement with NBC. And Versus paid some money, but that's not a lot either. So you're not getting much from the national television. Local television revenue is limited. You know, so the next you know, major you know, revenue stream is licensing. Well, just think about all these, you know, people call them Chinese jerseys, but they're not doing, you know, just in China. They're doing them in Schaumburg and Hickory Hills and Oak Brook, you know. There are people that are producing these off-the-market jerseys that the NHL is not seeing a dime off of. That contributes to it, too, you know. And, you know, I don't know, and nor is anybody going to tell us what John McDonough's contract is, but you talk about leaving the Cubs and coming to the Blackhawks. I am sure that he has performance bonuses tied into his deal, that if the Blackhawks meet certain revenue, and it's not profit, it's revenue, if they meet certain revenue markers, that he gets a bonus, and Jay Blunk as well, and the guy that they brought over from Ticketmaster. I mean, they're spending in every single area. They just built a new practice facility. All the enhancements they've done all over. They're spending money like crazy. So for them to, I mean, the timing was exact. I mean, it's on the eve of the convention. The potential was there for 4 or 5 rogue fans to come in and be belligerent about the ticket increase. But no surprise, and nor do I think that they're putting us on. The NHL is still a gate receipts league for the most part, and if you really break it down, the Blackhawks' gate receipts barely pay for their player payroll. So they were dependent on the playoffs to get back to above water, and apparently they didn't quite make it. Any thoughts on the Ilya Kovalchuk case that's going to be heard in a couple of days here?
No, not really. I mean, it's just been kind of humorous to watch. I wasn't surprised that the NHL put their foot down finally. I mean, at some point, you know, these things were going to just get ridiculous. Well, I mean, they were already ridiculous, but I mean, that was to the point of absurdity with the fact that, you know, the last 4 years of his deal, he'd be making below what the minimum salary is just this coming season. You know, I mean, he was getting paid, I think, I want to say $550,000, and I think within 2 years, you know, the minimum salary is going to be not well above that, but it'll be above that. And you're projecting 17 years down the line, you know, there was just no way that they could have, if they kept allowing deals like this, you know, you would have probably seen something as absurd as like a 30-year deal, you know, to somebody like Jonathan Tavares or something when he'd come up on his next contract. So I think they made the right move by doing it. What will ultimately happen, I have no idea. Nor do I really care because Lou Lamoriello, I mean, I think he gets more credit than he deserves a lot of times too.
It sounds, though, that this was a decision that went over his head, that this came down.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, because, I mean, as I think a lot of people know, Lamoriello has been very, very tight with the league office for years and years and years. You know, and the story that the Devils, capologist came from the league to, I think this was something that went over the, you know, Lou's head. And, you know, it's tough there in that New York market. And I think at some point, you know, the NHL's got to encourage one of those, and it's not going to be the Devils because they just built a new arena. He's got to encourage one of those three teams to move out of that market because, you know, the Islanders are just are fighting an uphill battle there. But, you know, the Devils look at it like they've got to make a major splash because they're always going to be second and third behind the Islanders in awareness there because they're, you know, they're over the river there in New Jersey. So we felt like they had to do something like this, you know, but I don't know that it makes them a Stanley Cup contender because what have we seen out of Marty Brodeur in the playoffs the last 2 years? Not much.
Well, yeah, and they're basically bringing back the same team that, you know, didn't show much of a spine against Philadelphia in the first round. I mean, I don't think that they've really, if my memory serves, I don't think, you know, if they bring back Kovalchuk, I don't know if they really added any other major pieces to a team that, you know, couldn't get past the first round, couldn't even win more than one game in the first round. So I don't know really how much you're improving yourself there. I mean, unless, you know, they're of the mind that, you know, just get us to the playoffs and then we'll see what happens from there. But, you know, I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Over in the West, is there, you know, and again, it's funny because the, you know, the hockey news and these major publications that produce their season previews, I mean, these things are all going to publish and already have over, you know, last week went to publish before, you know, a lot of teams are still very much up in the air. It appears as though Kevin BX is on the move in Vancouver. And, you know, so there's still some major, you know, major things that have happened and we don't really know. But looking at it right now, is there a team in the West that you think is going to make a major jump or fall off the map? Is there a contender out there for the Blackhawks crown, so to speak, that you have in your mind?
Well, I think Colorado is going to fall off. I don't think they're going to have as good of a run as they did this past year. I think they caught lightning in a bottle early in the season with Anderson. And I think, you know, the Peter Mueller trade that they made, you know, worked wonders for him until he got concussed. But I think I don't see them being able to recapture the year that they just had. Everybody talks about LA becoming the next, you know, Blackhawks. Well, they couldn't get past, you know, the Hawks in their first year of the playoffs, they got all the way to the conference finals. And LA couldn't get past the Vancouver team that, you know, got pretty handled in the second round. So I don't know if LA is as big of a contender as everybody makes them out to be. I think, you know, I think with Drew Doughty, I mean, you just have, you know, probably one of the, if he's not the best defenseman now, he's for sure the best young defenseman in the league. Detroit's always a threat in my mind. And then there's San Jose, who's basically bringing back the same team, and their number one competition, the Blackhawks, have gotten significantly weaker. So I think right now, I think you have to look at the Sharks, you know, even with all their playoff, you know, all their playoff history, that they have to be considered the favorites, even with Nidamaki and Grice in net, assuming that they don't make a play for Niemi, which is something that I think they might do.
I think it would be smart on their end. I know that they're pretty high on Grice. Nidamaki was brought in as, I mean, Nidamaki's an Olympic stud from, quite a few years back. But, you know, and he was pretty, I mean, he was decent with Philadelphia, but, and again, I mean, how many teams he's been, you know, he's in his third team in 3 years, I think, 4 years. Did get an email from another John a little while ago asking me about Craig Anderson. You mentioned the Colorado Avalanche. Craig Anderson is entering the last year of his deal. Do you think, he'll be 30 next summer. Do you think Craig Anderson is that something the Blackhawks are thinking about, Craig Anderson long term?
I'd like to see what he does this year first. I mean, I think, you know, he had you know, a real good year in Florida, and then he came back with an even better year this year in Colorado. But I think it all goes back to just how unpredictable goaltending is as a whole. I mean, you know, he's on top of the world right now, and he's probably thinking about the huge payday that he's going to get next summer. But, you know, if he has, you know, if Colorado finishes 10th, 11th in the conference, and, you know, he wins 20 games this year, you know, he's not going to be looking at that big of a raise in salary. And, you know, I think that, you know, for the, I'm of the mind that for goaltending, I'd like to, like the low risk, high reward type guys. And I think Anderson, if, assuming he doesn't have as good of a year as he does this year, and if he has more of like a regression, I think he'd be a real nice, you know, he could be a real nice pickup for him. But I don't know if they have it in mind already. I think they're kind of hoping that they can get through this year with Turco and, you know, kind of, you know, ease Crawford into the starting spot. And then, you know, next year when Crawford needs new paper, you know, that he'll probably, you know, they could give him the same money that they just gave Turco. Crawford's making $800 this year. You know, if it's assuming that he has a year that they're hoping he will, that they could just slot him right into that 1.3, and then they can just bring up, you know, any kind of, you know, maybe sign a veteran on the cheap or something else. But I think their main goal right now is to get Crawford some time up with the Hawks, more than just a start per year. You know, give him 20 to 25, you know, 30 if he responds well, and kind of take it from there.
Right, because I mean, that's the gamble that they're making right now. Is they need to know one way or another next summer, they need to know what the deal is with Crawford, because there's nobody else that's anywhere near ready. I felt bad for Kent Simpson, an 18-year-old kid who had a really bad prospect camp. If you're just looking at, you know, how many goals did he let in and everything, but you know, as an 18-year-old kid, he's 4 years away from playing in the NHL, but I mean, he's nowhere near ready. I guess the next guy that the Blackhawks have in the system that looks like he might be a prospect is Alec Richards, you know, who's tutored by Rangers Hall of Famer Mike Richter. So, I mean, there's a guy, but that's another thing with this UA thing, and Stan Bowman said today that in the coming weeks he's going to attack that situation. You know, I just don't. I mean, you got to find a dance partner, but the Blackhawks cannot have Hue and Rockford because, again, you have to develop goaltenders. And even if you don't develop one into a professional prospect, you have to give these guys an opportunity to prove what they can be. And if Hue's in Rockford and Rocky Wirtz still signing that check, he's not going to sit there and not play. And it wouldn't even make sense to do that anyway, because if one of your $6 million contracts or Hossa goes down and ends up on long-term IR for the rest of the season, and a situation arises where you can bring Hue up and give him some games and maybe potentially trade him or just give him a look so a team's thinking about him next summer, you would jump at that. So you'd want him to play. But in my opinion, you've got Richards down there, you've got Toivonen down there. Those guys got to play. And you can't have Hue there. But I don't know. One of the things that I spoke before about everybody loses in this arbitration thing with Niemi, in my opinion, right now, and this should have been what he did before, he should have never taken the Blackhawks to arbitration, because even if he has a really good year, there will always be questions when you're behind the Blackhawks. There will always be questions as well, how good would he be on a lesser team? And next summer, you've got Anderson, you've got Vokoun. Off the top of my head, I know there's a few more guys that are going UFA as goaltenders. And, yeah, there's uncertainty, and there seems to be young guys that are coming up and taking positions from vets all across the league. But this summer, how many teams were looking for goalies? You know, a Brizgalov.
2 to 3, yeah.
Yeah, Brizgalov's not going to stay in Phoenix. So you've got Brizgalov, Vokoun's not staying in Florida because they've got Jacob Markstrom coming up. They also got two other guys nobody talks about, Alexander Salak and Mark Chevrier. I mean, Florida's doing all right in the goaltending department as far as young kids coming up. So Vokoun's going to be on the move. Brizgalov's going to be on the move. Anderson might be on the move. And then you get Antti Niemi. So it never made sense for him to go to arbitration. That's the one thing in the arbitration case. You know, you've heard and read, I'm sure, John, you know that there's a 1- and a 2-year option in these arbitration cases. Well, you can choose 2 years, you know, for an arbitrator to choose on a 2-year contract, but not for a player that for that second year would be eligible to become a UFA. So a 2-year option in arbitration was never available to the Blackhawks. So Niemi, looking at this, you know, and his agent looking ahead, should have thought to themselves, well, no, let's take a 2-year deal and a little bit less money. Because I think, would you agree that if he accepted 2.25, 2.3, he'd be a Blackhawk? Or no?
I think they had the number in mind, and I think they wanted him under 2.
Under two? Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think anything over 2.5 was really going to, you know, would have caused them to do what they did. But I think long-term, the best thing for him was to play for the Blackhawks and have a two-year deal and go UFA 2 years from now. You know, if he – and now here he is. He's in this situation where, again, aside from maybe potentially the Sharks, the Flyers, Holmgren today said they have no interest in Niemi. So, you know, and the Flyers already are the favorite to come out of the East. So the favorite to come out of the East has no interest in him. Washington could be a destination if they could clear some cap space. But he probably cost himself money, and he's probably going to go to a team that's not as good as the, you know, the Blackhawks. So, you know, he's in a situation where he's going to have to take a two-year deal anyway. You know, I think this is this, historically we'll look back at this and Bill Zito and Antti Niemi and look at this as a huge mistake on their part, a miscalculation, that going UFA next summer and being here in Chicago for one or two more years and another run at the Cup, if not this year, certainly a year from now, would have been a better idea for him than doing what he did. And the end result is he could be an Islander, John.
He'll be with Wisniewski.
Yeah, Wisniewski. I engorged myself on the entire league, and so many hysterical quotes are coming out of New York Islander Nation. And granted, when you are an Islander fan or you follow the Islanders, there's not really much there to get excited about. So when your team makes an acquisition for a defenseman who makes $3.5 million, I mean, it's gonna create some noise. But I've heard so many things about James Wisniewski is the force that they need to take the next step on the blue line and all of this crap. I mean, James Wisniewski was 3.25 million. I mean, he makes Jalmerson seem like a bargain.
I can't believe how much he got. It's just amazing. And, you know, like we were talking about earlier with the possibility of a lockout, I mean, something like that does not bode well for the league for a guy like Wisniewski to be making that much.
And I would say I'm concerned about that contract just in that, you know, I mean, there's players. Wisniewski's younger, but he's also has a rep of being injury prone. And, you know, like I said to people out in New York right now, I said, okay, it's fine if you're excited about it now and you look at his numbers, and his numbers are one thing. But when you watch this guy play, you realize that the hockey sense just isn't there. And he doesn't play within himself, and, you know, I don't get it. We saw the James Wisniewski Act, and I fought with people for years about James Wisniewski. And finally, you know, the Blackhawks smartened up and got rid of him. Anaheim had him for a year and couldn't wait to get rid of him. Unfortunately, Bob Murray gave him a huge payday on the way out as a thank you. But Bob Murray got James Wisniewski as far away from Cam Fowler as possible. You know, and good for Bob Murray. And then, you know, Devin Setoguchi. You know, you talk about the Sharks. I mean, Devin Setoguchi taking that hometown discount of under $2 million to stay there. It's a 1 year deal, but obviously Devin Setoguchi believes that he has a chance to win a Stanley Cup in San Jose.
Yeah, absolutely. What was it? Do you remember his salary offhand from last year?
No, I can look it up real quick, but no, I don't have it.
I thought he was making over two, but that couldn't be the case if he. If he took a deal for 1.8.
Well, I mean, Skilly took less.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Skilly threw away his qualifying offer, and I'll have it here just in a second. But Devin Setoguchi earned, he was still on his, he's still on his entry, so he was 1.25.
Oh, okay.
But yeah,
he probably deserved over $2 million. I mean, if Andrew Ladd is making, you know, upwards of 2.35, you know, Devin Setoguchi's he's a top six player, and Andrew Ladd probably isn't, unless he's on a team like the Thrashers. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely could see Setoguchi being worth upwards of what he actually got.
And he's going to be an RFA again next summer, so it's not like he took a, you know, he took a low number figuring to cash in an unrestricted free agency next year, right? Real quick, a couple more things before we get going here. Winter Classic. You know, they had the announcement last week. Are you appalled by Pittsburgh being in the Winter Classic again?
Just in the jersey department. Supposedly that they're just going to wear the jerseys they wore from their inaugural season, and I think they should wear the ones from the 90s. And I'm excited to see the Caps, because I think that their jerseys were probably one of the top five. They're in my top five for sure. They'll be wearing the whites. I prefer the reds. And then they'll probably bring back the pants that they used to wear with the stars down the side, which were pretty cool too. So in that, I am looking forward. So for probably about 3 minutes, I'll be interested in watching it.
You know, the reason why the NHL went back to this is, you know, especially even though the decision was made beforehand, but you're coming off terrific ratings for Versus and NBC. You got to carry that momentum over. I mean, you're trying to negotiate yourself a deal with NBC in which you actually get paid money, you know, and you know, to have them broadcast your games, and they you know, make more of an investment in your product, so they become more partners than they currently are. So you're going to go with what you think will be a slam dunk. Certainly on the East Coast, the two biggest stars are Crosby and Ovechkin. And if you promote it right, it will play to most of the rest of the country. I don't think that there's a better matchup that they can put on. Certainly there are other teams that maybe deserve to be in that position, but when you're trying to get ratings and trying to put on a game that will mean something to a broader audience, I don't think that they had another choice. And really, if you think about it, I mean, what else, you know, people are going to complain about anything. If it was the Rangers, people would have complained about the Rangers. The Rangers are always on national television. And I mean, you're not going
to. No, right. It's the right two teams to be playing.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. Well, the fifthfeather.com, or fifthfeather.com, you and Bob are over there. My opinion. And not just because you're on, I think I've said this to you before, the best, most informative and a thorough site on the net for Blackhawks talk. What do you guys got in store for this upcoming season?
Well, we haven't even really thought about it that far. Well, probably, you know, we haven't discussed whether we're going to do the player previews that we did last year. I think it was easier last year as far as getting, you know, knowing which 18 to 20 guys were going to be on it to where we could, you know, personally profile each one. It'll be a little bit tougher to do this year. As far as, you know, what we have in store, probably the same thing. I think eventually we'd like to make the site a little bit more user-friendly, interactive, make it a little bit more higher tech, per se. I mean, it is pretty just cut and dry right now where we're just kind of writing stuff. I think we'd like to get some images on there and stuff like that, maybe even incorporate some video. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
All right, and that's fifthfeather.com for all what John's got. And Bob will make an appearance at the Fifth Feather eventually at some point here, I assume.
Yeah, he's in the midst of a new job, so he's had his priorities rearranged.
And then you recently got married, did you not?
We both did, actually, and amazingly not to each other, so.
Oh, there you go. All right, John, thank you very, very much for joining us, for myself. We look forward to doing it, and hopefully Bob can join us next time.
Yeah, hopefully. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks to everybody for listening, and I'll be back next Tuesday, whatever that's going to be. Let me look at the calendar. Tuesday, August 10th at 8 p.m. here at blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin, and hopefully at thethirdmanin.com somewhat in the near future here. Again, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Good night, everybody.